Valvoline Instant Oil Change wants you to breathe out your oil change anxiety and breathe in automotive peace. Visit us today.
As ever, welcome to the podcast, mate.
Oh, cheers, man. Thanks for having me.
You've played over 131, you've played 131 NRL games, 184 Super League games. It's my studies on Wikipedia last few days. And you won two premierships with St. Helens in the UK. I want to talk a little bit about your rugby league career. But before that, you've just recently retired. How's that treating you?
Nah, it's treating me really well. I sort of like, you know, obviously when I came back from England playing for St. Helens, you know, I came back and I thought I was really, really retired. But I ended up like, you know, getting a job straight away, working at a school called Marsden. And then, yeah, sort of got the itch again to like, oh, you know, if I'm good enough to keep playing on, why not, you know, try and play again? So I decided to play Q Cup and, yeah, decided to play for Wyndham. And I thought like that's like a good way to transition into retirement and into full retirement. So hopefully I'm really done now.
I think the missus hopes you're really done now.
Yeah, she's she needs some time with me and me being at home with the kids a lot. Like obviously the Wyndham gig, you know, living in the Goldie, traveling up to school in Marsden and then going to Wyndham training. Like I was getting home at 9 o'clock at night and yeah, it was really frustrating.
do you feel like the coming back and playing Queensland Cup for that 1 year has helped you transition into life outside rugby league? I know it's only been a few weeks, but how do you feel like it's helped you?
Nah, it's helped me heaps. Like, you know, obviously when I didn't have no plan coming back from England. Like I came back and I chilled for about 2 months, like, you know, getting up nice and early, going, doing a workout in Burley with this gym called BMF and, you know, shout out to them, giving them a plug, sorry. Yep,
that's what I mean. Plug all you like, mate. Hopefully you get some freebies going.
Hey, a couple of free sessions, eh?
Yeah. Well, you don't use a gym now, so you don't be using the Wyndham gym, so.
Yeah, so then, and I'm playing a lot of golf, like, because I love my golf, you know, we played a lot together, you know, when we were at the Titans and, man, I was just chilling, eh? And then I just thought, well, like, I can't do this forever. So I something just popped up. Like, a guy named Matt Hardigan from Marsden, he runs a rugby league excellence program there. And he just, like, I knew him from back in Sydney because we went to the same high school together, but he's probably 3 years younger than me. And, he called me out of the blue and asked me if I want to do some youth work at school. And I was like, youth work, damn, like, but I didn't say no. I just jumped at it because you don't get opportunities like that in life. And I wasn't looking for anything. It's sort of like, you know, it came onto my doorstep. So I just jumped at it and went into that role of being a youth support coordinator at Marsden State High School. So doing it, like looking after year 7, 8, and 9 kids. And it was a mad culture shock, eh? Probably like to the point where, damn, like I need to start like studying this and researching about issues within high school. And because, like, you know, when you look at young kids that are coming through high school, some of them get like really overwhelmed and they have a heavy anxiety, and some of them deal with depression. Like some of them are even like dealing with like the critical, you know, symptoms, like, you know, your self-harming and suicide ideation. So I had to learn real quick about all that kind of stuff. So it was a mad, like, culture change for myself, like, being part of a rugby league, like, environment and then going straight into working in the school environment where I thought I was meant to, like, go there, be, like, a youth worker and just go, you know, play basketball and with kids or just mucking around with kids and that. But it's more to just going out and taking a kid and just mucking around. It's pretty much, like, learning what kids go through these days.
So. Yeah. In a way, kind of, you know, learning a bit more about psychology and you know, how the young kids operate so you can help them best.
Yeah, it is like that. And, I'd say it's probably the best experience I've had in my whole life. and it's definitely opened up avenues to other things. So I enrolled into a diploma in youth work, and you know, I'm halfway through that at the moment. So just slowly learning and getting qualified up to do something like that. And now this term, my role has changed from being a youth support coordinator to being like an athlete wellbeing manager at the school. So like, I'm more excited about that because I get to work with athletes, because I get to sort of like mentor at the same time and sort of like, you know, dabble in a little bit of like psychology side of things and that. So no, it's really good, and yeah, I'm enjoying it now.
I'm glad you found something that you really enjoy doing, because it's something that not every, as you know, former rugby league player knows, that they, you know, something that they love. I know several who have retired and, you know, unhappy with what they're doing and constantly looking for something else, which there's nothing wrong with constantly looking for something else, but, you know, to be able to do what you really enjoy now is seems like something that's good that's happening for you.
Yeah, so, for me, it's experience. Like I could have probably said it, like, you know, the start of like January this year, said, nah, I don't want to work in a school. Mm. Like, then what else would I have done? You know, so definitely working at Marsden has definitely opened up like a lot of avenues. And, you know, me as a person, I'm a massive thinker and I think a lot. I've got so many ideas that just goes through my head, and like, I need to settle sometimes of like what I really want to do in life. So it's definitely, Marsden is definitely like working there is definitely like a platform for me to probably, you know, work into something else later on. So yeah, I'm excited about it. And going back to like, you know, when players do transition out of like rugby league, some of them probably struggle because they're not keen to jump into things. Yeah. They just like, because it's not paying the same money. Like, you got to get that experience to build up your reputation again. It's like you're starting over again. So that's like it for me at the moment. So I'm enjoying it.
Yeah, for sure. I think I'm trying to take that approach with this podcast. That's the mentality I try and take. After speaking to Kevin Gordon the other day, he said, we're talking about like extras and stuff like that. It was like, you know, when you're a 15-year-old, you know what you want. You want to play NRL. You're doing your extras. You're thinking about the game. You want to get better. And just applying those extras. And for me as a 15-year-old, that's what I knew I wanted to do, play professional rugby league. It's kind of similar applying to this podcast. It's early days. You know, working with Jace on a weekly basis and trying to get that experience up. I think that's the key thing right now, and I'm certainly enjoying it. But I'm still lucky that I get to play a whole year of rugby league again.
Don't get me wrong. I'm still jealous of the boys that are going to preseason training and doing that. I love that stuff.
You're like, jealous of the preseason?
Yeah. I tell you what. Like, if you could play, if an NRL club would like, you know, knock on your door, and I'm 37, but I could probably pass my best. But you know what I mean? Just to be a part of the boys, being part of a team environment, it's the best. Like, and I do miss that, but at the same time, like, you know, you can't play rugby league forever. So,
yeah. We've known each other for a little while now, but, you know, thinking about doing this podcast, I actually don't know much about your upbringing very well.
It's nothing special, bro. Hey.
Nothing special, but yeah, I'm sure some people listening there that would be very keen to hear about your upbringing. So can you tell us a little bit about what it was like, where it was?
So, like, I'm born and raised in Australia. Like, born at Auburn Hospital. So, you know, my parents are both born in the islands, in Cook Islands, like in a place called Penryn. Like, if you don't know, like, Cook Islands are made out of, like, 15 islands, and we're pretty much the furthest island away from Rarotonga. So I've never been to Penryn, but like Raro is, I've been there and it's so beautiful, but I was brought up in Sydney, and, you know, fast forward to probably play some junior rugby league down at a club called Enfield Federals, you know, with some of my cousins and that. So the funny thing with our culture is, like, you know, all our family and that, we tend to stick together. So, like, there's this place called Chalora, and there was a block of flats. I reckon there would have been about maybe 10 families just living in these block of flats. Mm. And we used to just all just muck around with each other, like, you know, go over to each other's houses. Our units, wasn't houses, just units and all that. And you know, just grow up, like, for the first probably 9 years of our life, just, you know, spending it with our cousins and it was so fun. We used to just, like, run amok. We used to, like, it was like a big block, and we used to have bikes and just ride around the whole block with all our cousins and that. So, yeah, that was really exciting until we all, pretty much the whole of those block of flats, whoever lived in there, we shifted all the way out west to probably, you know, some went to Mandurah. We went to a place called Colleton, right next to St. Clair, where I finally ended up and sort of like started like getting serious with rugby league when I was playing for a team called St. Clair Comets. So, yeah, that's a little bit about my child upbringing. Like, I've got one brother. I was pretty tight with him, and my younger sister. You know, we still chat a lot, but over the probably the last 14 years and that, like, you know, being away from family has been probably one of the toughest things, because I grew up with a lot of family being around. So, yeah, it's anything else you want to know?
Yeah. No, just about your upbringing. That's an interesting story. Yeah. I think you know your teammates, but where they grew up, that's something we don't really talk about much, or are conscious of. We're just there at training, getting to know each other. But getting to know that story, that's very interesting. Thanks for sharing that. I love talking about extras. Now, when you were growing up and starting to think about rugby league a bit more seriously, were you ever big on extras?
Nah, not really. I was just one of those kids that was pretty much languishing, like, behind. You know, when you look at like the good teams in, like, you know, coming through the under 15s and 16s and that, like, you know, I was in a good team, but I was never the best player. I was always like the one that, like, would just be in the team and just make the tackles and do all the little stuff. But I was no superstar when I was a young kid. But like, my brother was probably the better player out of both of us, and he was 1 year younger than me. And I started high school, and my attitude when I was in year 6 to year 7 just fully changed. Like, I didn't have no care for school, education or anything. And, like, my dad was getting a bit worried. So my brother got recruited to go to Blacktown Patrician Brothers, like, back then. And my dad said to the recruiter, if he goes, you're going to have to take the older one. So that's how I got into Blacktown Patrician Brothers, because my brother got recruited to go there. And once I went to Blacktown Patrician Brothers, it was just a whole new world. Like, rugby league boys were, like, bigger than me. They were stronger, faster. Man, I couldn't even make the A's. Like, I was always in the B squad, like, for the first, like, maybe 4 years of being at Blacktown Patrician Brothers. So it took a while to, like, sort of, like, make a name for myself at high school. But to be honest, it took just one game, eh? Like, I played one game in year 12, finally getting a start in the top squad. And, that's when I started getting noticed, eh? So,
well, what'd you do in that one game?
Oh, man.
Well, a couple of tries?
Couple of tackle breaks, couple of offloads.
Yeah. Is that, like, did that give you confidence, or did it just teachers, like, recognize you?
I don't know. There must have been, you know, there probably would have been a manager around at the time, and just seeing what I had, and don't want to say who that manager was, but like, pretty much signed me up straight away, and then got me into a club, got me into, like, the Parramatta system straight away.
Yeah.
So it's just crazy how, like, just one game just changes something. And then, yeah, I was like, I ended up joining the SG ball squad in 2002, halfway through the season. And, we ended up making the grand final, but we got beat by a Western Suburbs team, like, in that grand final. But just my rise from 2002, from halfway through the year, being in the school boy system, just went, like, it just changed overnight. Like,
yeah.
I wasn't nobody until I played, like, one good game, and then ended up into like, the Parramatta SG ball squad. And Jason Taylor was a coach too then. And, yeah, just everything just springboard from there. Like, just started working hard from there, knowing that, you know, I was good enough to mix it with some of the good players in my age group.
Yeah. When you're making your way through SG ball, right? Yeah. Were there any moments that could have taken you off track? And how did you handle those?
No, No, not really. Like from then onwards, I took it serious. Like I wanted it so bad that like I made sure that, you know, when your mates and that are enjoying themselves and going to like parties and that, like I was sort of like being a little bit sensible at the same time and enjoying myself, but at the same time, like knowing that, that I couldn't put on too much weight because, you know, I had training the next day. I couldn't do, like, couldn't eat bad food or something because I knew that, like, you know, I had to do a running session and that. So I was pretty clear like that, like, yeah. Knowing that, like, I was aware of, nah, I can't be doing that because, you know, like, I've got a big training session tomorrow. So I wasn't never one of those dudes that would go and do something silly and then turn up to training the next day thinking I can train, because I just knew that if I did that, like, I'd struggle. And then the coaches will look at you and just go, man, what's wrong with this kid? Like, you know, so I always gave my best. Like when I look at like 2002 onwards, yeah, I always made sure that I worked hard.
Because what you just described there, that's a common thing with a lot of NRL and, you know, professional rugby league players. They're very clear with what they want at that age, because that's the age where you see all this talent come through, under 20s, under 18s, and nearly making first grade, but alcohol comes into play, partying comes into play, and then these are more guys who are more talented than, you know, guys that you're currently playing with. And those guys, it's such a shame, because when I look back at under 20s, there were so many guys in that team who just had so much more talent than the guys who are playing first grade now, and they've kind of went off track because of alcohol and partying. And I think what you described is that having that clear goal, clear vision of what you want, is very important in, you know, helping you avoid those distractions.
Yeah, like, you know, don't get me wrong, like it wasn't like, yeah, I had a clear mind that I wanted to make it, but it still was a long road. Like I didn't make my debut till 2006, and like in 2002, I still had to go through, you know, SG Ball, Jersey Fleck, and another year of Jersey Fleck. And then I had to play 2 years of like 2 years of Premier League. And then boom, I got my debut. So I went through the system the proper way. Like, and I didn't get fast-tracked. Like, you know, for example, like someone like a Jared Hayne and or Chris Inu back then, like they probably would have played, you know, maybe limited games of like SG Ball, you know, into Jersey Fleck, and then straight into Premier League, and then boom, they're first graders. Like for me, I served my apprenticeship, and I think that's what made me the player who I am today, is that like I learned a lot from a lot of players like coming through the ranks, and it was good, and different coaches. So it was quite enjoyable at the same time, but it was definitely hard. Like training was always hard for me. I was never the fittest, but trying to like, you know, train my body up to like keep up and or be at least in the middle of the pack, because yeah. I never want to be at the back, because like, you know what they say about the people at the back, they just says, nah, like go do some extras.
Yeah.
You know, if you came back too heavy, you're in the fat squad, you know, doing that. And I never wanted to be that dude. So like I learned all that at a young age to make sure come back in okay nick, and then, you know, be in the middle of the pack.
Yeah.
And, you know, obviously I would help like all the boys that would struggle, but yeah, it was. I had that clear goal.
When there's a, I know you're someone who has helped young guys, you know, when they're struggling at training or with their games. When there's a player in the team struggling, and you want to approach him, how do you approach him and help him with his mindset or with his training?
Man, that is probably one of the hardest things that you could do. Like, you know, it didn't like for me when I realized, okay, I've got to start being the leader of, like at a club and that, yeah, I used to like go up to the younger boys and try and talk to them in a way that they could understand, and like still be their mate, but still tell them, hey man, what are you getting up to on the weekends? Like, and sometimes the boys used to just lie to you and just think, oh no, I've been good, man, like back home doing nothing, but really you know what they were doing. But that was me approaching them and saying, oh, have you been eating healthy? Have you, like, what have you been doing? Because, like, you know, like, you get the tap on the shoulder from the big boss, man, the coach, and say, hey, man, you need to go talk to this kid, man. Like, he's tracking really badly. But, like, give him some, you know, motivation to make sure that he's on. Some of them reacted, but some of them didn't. And those ones that didn't probably were fast to get booted from the from the first grade team. So, yeah, it is hard. But, like, if you want to be a real leader, those are the tough conversations you got to have with your teammates. And that's one thing that I probably started doing, like, maybe to probably 3 or 4 years towards the back end of my career. Because, like, it's hard. Like, I don't want to tell a kid to do something and I know I'm not doing it. So if I know that, nah, you got to do it this way, yeah, 100%, I'll go tell that kid, nah, hey, you know, put your head in.
Yeah.
You know, do it. Like, don't complain. Don't whinge, you know.
Yeah.
Be grateful that you're in this like, situation, like, being part of a full-time squad, you know, doing this for a living and getting paid for it. So the one thing that I noticed during my career, like, for me, that I thought the easiest part was getting there, but the hardest part was how do I stay here for a long time?
Yeah.
So, and that's where you need to learn about preparation, learn about, like, what kind of extras that you should be doing, learning, like, if you really do need extra fitness, just all that little stuff. And obviously with your food intake, like, learning what's good to put in your body and not. And, like, it got to a point where I was just, and my missus hates this, so I could eat the same meal 5 nights in a row, and then she'll come up to me, what's for dinner? Okay, chicken, broccoli, sweet potato, and a bit of rice. Like, or I'll just change it up with a bit of salmon and that. And, like, she goes, oh, yuck. Like, you know what I mean? Like, it's just, it was like that. And, like,
yeah,
okay, it's like, but this is me. Like, for me to stay at this level, like, this is the stuff I should be eating. You know, I could eat it like 2 times a day and not get sick of it. You know what I mean?
So you never got sick of it?
No, I never got sick of it.
Did, like, you at least change, like, the spices or anything cooked with it, or salt?
Moroccan spice sometimes or you got your garlic salt sometimes. Oh, man. Sometimes I, like, you know, if I find a new spice and it gets, like, the missus go, oh, that was nice what you did to the chicken. I just changed the spice.
Well, that's what I try to do as well, trying to eat the same thing at least 5 days a week. Normally it's steak, salad, potato or sweet potato. That's for dinners and lunches. Breakfast is the same as well, a bit of porridge and honey and banana. But I think just it takes any decision-making out of your head, which, you know, in a way saves energy.
Oh, man, I've got working at a school, like, I don't like going to the tuck shop, and that's wasting money for me. So every Sunday, I'll go buy about maybe 2 kilos worth of chicken. I make up heaps of rice. I cut about 6 or 7 potatoes, and I have about maybe 6 containers lying on the bench. And I just go, "Yep, this is my lunch for every single day of the week." And I can do that. And, like, when I'm there eating it, like, during lunchtime, I go, "Man, this, how good is this? I'm putting the right stuff in my body. I'm not even playing rugby league anymore. Like, you know, I still just want to maintain, like, that body. I just don't want to let myself go away."
Yeah. Do you ever eat bad?
Yeah, I do. Like maybe 2 times of the week. Yeah. Like, I love my ice cream. I definitely have dessert, like, now every night of the week now. But I make sure I just wake up early and go do a workout before I go to work. So, yeah, like, on the weekends when we get lazy a bit, just order some pizza for us and the family. You know, KFC's always on the menu.
Yeah.
Even Macca's. Like, yeah, I eat junk food all the time. But
just the 5 days out of the week.
Yeah, 5 days out of the week at school, I make sure I eat the same thing every day. Like, I have my yogurt, have some fruit, and have my lunchbox with everything. Like I'm proper going to school, eh?
Yeah. Mate, I think it's a pretty good discipline. Like, if you can get your food right, man, your energy is always going to be pretty good. Eh? That's one way to keep your energy levels up, and obviously stay in shape as well.
Yeah.
I got interviewed over Zoom yesterday by a kid from high school, and he asked how to handle nerves in a game. And obviously in high school, it's something that kids have to deal with, especially leading to exams. How do you handle nerves, especially leading up into a game?
I try and stay as relaxed as I can. Like, and I sort of, like, only learned this probably the last maybe, like, halfway through my career. I was like, damn, like, man, I'm struggling with the way I prepare for getting into games. So I come up with a method where I've got to do a bit of just maybe 5 minutes, not even that, of like probably meditating after I have my nap before going to a game. And just pretty much just keeping it nice and simple and just being so relaxed. And then when you get to the game, like for me as a back rower, I know that I'm massive on the little one percenters and the effort areas. So if I can get my kick chase right and my kick pressure and get good line speed, you know, I've got that down pat for defense. And then and anything that happens in attack, I try and get my ball, my hands on the ball as much as I can. But being a back rower, you sort of like run a lot of decoys. And and then you ask for early ball sometimes, but sometimes it never comes out to you. So that's as simple as like you can have it. Like, so think about what your role is and just stay relaxed, but just keep it real simple. Like, you're not going to go out there and set the world on fire all the time. That's just an advantage. That's a plus if that happens mm-hmm. in games. And I noticed that for me, keeping things nice and simple always worked. Like, sometimes kids probably overcomplicate things today and they think they need to go out there and impress because they need to sign a contract with, like, you know, like a development squad or something. But if they just go out there and have fun and keep things simple and think of, like, maybe probably two things in each attack and defense, like, that's all you need.
Yeah.
Like, you don't need to, like, reinvent the wheel and create something special.
Yeah.
Just let do the simple things first, and then everything else will take over.
Yeah, because we were on the weekend when we were watching the Cupid games at Bean Lee there, when I turned up to watch the game, all I was looking for, the kids that ran hard, got up off the ground, played the ball quick, because that's what you were looking for. That's what coaches in NRL are looking for. You know, obviously got to be strong in defense, sticking your tackles. The kids that were trying to do the chip and chase, that type of stuff, you're kind of looking going, come on, mate.
Yeah.
Just run the ball. There's plenty of holes there. You don't need to do all this stuff. But, I mean, the other thing is under 16, so you want to have a bit of fun as well.
Yeah.
It's not as serious competition, but when I was watching the games, I'm looking for the guys who are just running hard, playing tough. So I think that's a good foundation for the guys coming through.
Yeah, and like, that's one thing that you should have when you're a young kid. You know, run the ball hard and tackle hard. Always have them two things in your head. But at the same time, like, if you work on a couple of other things, like, and keeping it nice and simple, like, you'll go good. And things will always work out for you. Like, don't overcomplicate things. Don't think too much about, like, you know, the game or and that beforehand, because you get mentally drained before you even take the field. I used to be like that. I used to, like, you know, think about the game, think about, oh man, let's go this match right in the corner. Like, you know, just dream of, like, you know, doing things in the game. And then when I get to the game, I couldn't even move. Like, my legs were just so jelly. And, like, yeah. I get out there and I was play rubbish. And I had a lot of those games when I was a young kid, especially in high school.
Yeah.
Man, what was wrong with me today? Like, and you educate yourself at an adult and goes, man, imagine if I knew that when I was, like, in high school.
Yeah.
Maybe things could have been different. So that's why I'm working at a high school, because, like, you know, giving that sort of like that mentorship to kids and learn and teaching them that way, like, you know, it will clear their head. You know, it will definitely clear what's up in their head, and, like, thinking that they don't have to, like, you know, be the superstar of the team. Yeah. They just go out there and just do their job.
Yeah. That's a great advice. So 15 years playing at the top level, what are the key things you believe that you did to keep you in the game for so long? I know you spoke a bit about preparation and food intake. Maybe if you can elaborate on that or add a few more things.
Yeah, definitely. I invested in a few things. Like, you know, you obviously, I had these recovery pumps that I invested in, and they worked the treat, you know, like, because I felt like, you know, when you're doing the preseason and you get heavy legs, you know, get on the recovery pumps every night and they'll freshen your legs up for the next day. So, like, because I didn't like being that dude that was old but missing sessions. I always liked doing the sessions. So I always made sure that, you know, if there was an ice bath, like, I never done ice baths in England because it was just too cold. Like, I just refused to jump in an ice bath in England. Like, but I was just massive on like a bit of, like, stretching and doing all the pre-ab stuff before the game. And I think that's probably what like kept me like going for so long and making sure that like the night after the game, like I struggled with sleeping, but going and doing something and being active the day after and like not lounging around and being lazy. I think, you know, moving around and that would always help. So yeah, I was always massive on the little stuff like your recovery pumps and your and those electrotherapy and all that kind of stuff. And what else was there that I used to have? Like I had a game ready. Like game ready was the best. I invested in one in France and every time I had like a bung knee or my shoulder was sore, just get the game ready. Yep. You know. Like get on it for about maybe half an hour or so and yeah. And just sometimes I even slept like with the game ready on, but like yeah, I was crazy with all the gadgets and that when it came to recovery stuff. But that's like when I looked at the price of like when I bought it, or I just go, it's probably the best investment I ever done during my career.
Yeah.
And like young kids don't understand it. Like when you tell them like, you know, about the stuff that you did and guess, oh, how much did that cost? That's too much.
Yeah.
But it's okay. But you're getting like what? Like, you know, you're getting probably like 200K a year and you want to go out and spend it on junk food and all that kind of stuff. Like put a bit away and then, you know, invest in these other things that's going to make you a better,
keep like a better player.
But at the same time, like clubs are getting those stuff now, those kinds of like the recovery pumps in your game readies. You can just go to like for example, Brisbane Broncos, they've probably got the best like recovery set up there where it's all there.
Yeah.
And you don't need to go and buy that stuff. So that's good, you know, with the NRL systems.
Definitely very professional in the NRL. They got all the, especially at the Bronx, sauna, ice bath, swimming pool, all the recovery.
Not that ice bath at the old Bronco Center.
yeah. Which one was that?
After the grand final, we went.
Oh, the real cold one.
Man.
Yeah, that's bad.
They need to ease up on that one. That's just.
That must have been like 2 or 4 degrees. That was very cold. What was the hardest part about playing in the NRL Super League?
Like the hardest part was not having to rely, like not having family around. Like, and at times it was pretty tough. Like just, you know, some families when they, you know, they take their kids overseas and that, and like, man, like it's hard. It's hard to like, you know, you're by yourself on the other side of the world. So that was probably the hardest thing about the Super League, definitely. But within the NRL, man, I didn't find anything tough about being like in the NRL. Like it was physical and it was mentally challenging every single week, but I enjoyed that. I enjoyed that. Like, so yeah, I can't really give you a straight answer there, bro.
That's all right. That's good enough for you. That's good enough for the podcast. What was the best part about playing NRL Super League?
The best part of playing? Obviously playing against the best players like in the world. Like in the NRL, you're playing against the best players like in the NRL. Then we go to the Super League, like you're playing against the best England players. So, man, there's some great talent over there. And like you've played there, I played there. Like there's some dudes over there that could probably come in and they could like handle the NRL standard, but they choose to just stay there because – like they want to be like, you know, great Super League players, and I don't knock them for that. Like, one of my good mates, Elliot Whitehead, like he was at Catalans and he was only starting out, but like for him to come to go to Canberra, and he's like one of the best back rows in the world, and for England, like I like seeing that. Yeah. I like seeing when players are, same as my teammate that was at Saints, like Luke Thompson, he's come over here and he's taking it on and he's playing at the Bulldogs. So it's good seeing those dudes that you played against and you know that they're good quality players like in the Super League come over here and give the NRL a crack because there's a lot of them over there that can come here and be good players. But, yeah, hopefully we'll see more in the future. But, I can't knock the Super League. Like the standard does drop just a little bit when you go there, but at the same time, like, when you play your top teams against your top teams, say like us playing against a Wigan, man, that's, you can't get like a fiery matchup than that. Like it's probably one of the best games you can ever be a part of. And I'm grateful for those moments, like playing in the Super League, like playing against like Wigan at like at the DW Stadium or at Saints, like on a week on a Good Friday. Yeah. Like that's massive. Like crowds, man, they go loud, man, and the physicality of those games, you walk off the field and you can feel every hit that comes at you. So, and then when you play against your Leeds and your Warrington teams, like those are massive games. So, like it was good going back and being part of like Saints and experiencing that, because you know that probably made me a better player at the same time. Like getting to be a part of that team and playing against those teams as well. So, yeah, I enjoyed it.
What do you think's the main difference between NRL and Super League?
I think it's just the pace. Like, you know, the physicality for me was still the same.
Yeah, it's all the same.
It's still the same. Like, you know, like, but definitely the pace and obviously maybe the caliber of players over here are just like, it's crazy to think like we already played like three games and then we played against Roosters in a World Club Challenge and they didn't play no games and they still beat us like comfortably. You know what I mean? Yeah. So it was a contest at times, but like that was crazy to think, oh, these guys hadn't even played a game yet and they still beat us. And like, yeah, you know, we ended up winning the comp that year still like in 2019, but like in 2020, but you know, they came over and beat us like comfortably, yeah, like in that 2019.
Just
a lot
more pool of players to choose from and just the talent around the Pacific and Australia.
Just like when you look at the Roosters team, then like it was a star-studded team, like compared to like our team. Like we were good, like working well together, but like you look at that team, I was like, damn, like superstars everywhere.
Yeah.
Tedesco, like Hargraves.
International. You know, just,
yeah, everywhere. Like Joseph Manu. Like they had a mad team.
Yeah. I want to talk a little bit about your experience in France. did you eat a lot of croissants?
I tell you what, when I first got there, like, when I first got to France, man, like I stayed with a guy named Daryl Millard. He's a good bloke, like Fijian international, like took me under his wing. And I stayed with him for probably the first week. And like, man, I learned a lot of stuff off him. I learned how to eat healthy. I learned about the paleo diet. So I was massive on the paleo diet. Thanks, Daryl, like if you're watching this. but I was with him for a week and then, you know, a lot of the boys were like giving me stick. Oh, man, when are you going to move into your house? Because the front, like they got me a house and everything, good family house. And I just didn't want to go there by myself. So I ended up making the move going there. And then like, oh, man, I walked around the corner, seeing this mad bakery. I was just smashing the pain au chocolat and the croissants and the baguettes. I was like, you know, like that was lunch. That was dinner, lunch and tea, man. Just like a full ham sandwich baguette, bro, just smashing that. You know what it's like, you know, like you have like a ham, cheese, tomato, like roll.
Yeah.
Like you had that in France. It's just another level.
Yeah.
And I was just smashing that like almost every day.
They're bigger than the footlongs over here.
Yeah, 100%. Yeah. And I was just a lot of pastries, man. I put on so much weight in that first 3 weeks and then I started doing a bit of training. I just noticed, nah, no more. Get back to healthy eating, man. Because this is not what you. This is not what you like. You practice. Like,
yeah.
You're like, I was always about eating healthy. So yeah, got back on the healthy bandwagon after 3 weeks of being there.
If you sign with Catalan Dragons, stay off the croissants and baguettes. I love them, eh?
Yeah.
I try to limit myself because you obviously notice it when you're training.
What about like in between like sessions? Like the boys will go have a proper full meal. And then like they'll have a red wine. And I go, what are you guys doing? What are you drinking red wine? Like you were training.
Is that the teammates?
Yeah.
Hey, man, we didn't do that. Bernard, if you're listening, is the owner of the club at Catalan. We didn't do that. Just when you had the bad boy Zeb over there.
No, I was one of their good boys, man. But I don't know about the other dudes.
No, it's a great club, Catalan Dragons. Certainly enjoyed our time over there. What was one thing that you loved about the south of France?
Oh, man, the travel. Just the fact that, like, you know, if people don't know, like, Perpignan is down the south of France and you can just cross the border within, like, half an hour. And then, like, the whole Costa Brava region was the best. Like, me, the missus, and we only had one at the time until 2014 when we had two. We used to just go down there all the time. Like, even on days off, just travel down to Spain, go stay at this at the beach, like probably leave at like maybe 8 o'clock in the morning, go down there and come back, leave there around about 4 o'clock, come back home. It was the best. Like, used to get heaps sunburn and like be in the sun all day, but didn't really affect like my training or anything. Like, I just felt like so relaxed and enjoying the lifestyle.
Yeah. That's a good thing. I think they've worked it out, the Europeans. I think during the summer, the population grows about 100 or 200,000.
Yeah.
People from all over Europe, China, a couple of other countries from Asia travel and live there for the 6 months.
Like, it's crazy, like, when you're living in Cano and, like, you're there in winter and it's a ghost town. No one's there. And, like, you guys, oh, man, this is boring. Like, when's it going to liven up? Like, and then once, like, summer comes, like, everyone, like, all the beach, like, what is it? The
beach bars.
The beach bars are all setting up on the beach and you just, oh man, it was the great, like when summer came around, you couldn't even get a car park in summer when you go down there. So
The only problem is that's in the middle of the season.
Yeah, I know. How bad was it, eh? It was your team used to always go down there.
Well, Catalan thought we started at the top of the table at the start of the year when no one's around and then when the beach bars open.
Yeah, that's when our Catalans were pretty good, like at the start of the season when summer came, it was just like they just dropped in form. Nah, jokes.
Oh wow, Zeb. Hating on the Catalan.
I'll tell you what, I'll bring up like one of my probably worst memories. It was like when we played against you guys in the Challenge Cup. And I remember this photo, I think you posted on Facebook, like you're carrying on, like celebrating. And I'm there in the photo, just like, oh wow, happening here. Was it you that posted it?
It must have been, yeah. Accidentally posted it.
They got us in the Challenge Cup semi.
You've been in the photo.
Yeah.
We had to win something that year. We weren't having a great year, so I think all our energy was put into the Challenge Cup.
100%.
And we had to do something.
Did you just get looked after, like after he's won?
Mate, it was really good.
Yeah.
We got back to the airport. The flight back home was crazy. Very loud, noisy.
Nah, I was happy for you guys. Like at the end of the day, old club beating you in the semi-final, but seeing you guys beat Warrington was good.
Yeah, that was good. A great experience. Yeah. I love that. How'd you find the language barrier? First moved over, was it?
To be honest, man, like I try to have a crack, and I tried my best to talk, and it got to a point where I could probably hold a little bit of conversation, but my French was really, really terrible. Like, my missus understood it more, but she couldn't speak it. But then, like, I could speak it a little bit. So we sort of, like, helped each other out. But, yeah, that's the one thing, probably another regret of mine. We pretty much stayed within our bubble.
Yeah.
You know? Like, we did have, like, family, friends away from rugby league where we used to go over, and we just tried our best to speak the bare minimum French to them. But it was, like, it was pretty hard, eh? And I think I had to do more of that and get around more French players and enjoy the culture a little bit more to, like, able to speak French. So, yeah, definitely. But best 3 years of my life, like, staying in France. Like, loved it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's a great part of the world. I mean, if anyone is thinking of going to France, go live there for a couple of years and experience it. And if it's your first time going there and you don't know any French, my advice is, for the first 6 months, there's an app called iTalkI now.
Yeah.
And you can pretty much contact anyone in the world to give you lessons. Very cheap. You know, you go on there and there's reviews on every teacher and how many lessons they've done.
Is that how you learn your French? Well, You're pretty fluent, eh?
This was in the third year. The first 2 years, I just dabbled in French, trying to find ways to speak it. Tried. But in my third year, the first 2 or 3 months, I did like heaps of lessons on iTalkI, and that whole year I was able to have good conversations with, you know, the French family that we had who looked after us when we first got there. And that was changed my experience in France massively, because that last year I was able to just go ahead and communicate with everyone, you know, at the shops. And that makes those little moments make all the big difference.
100%. It makes life so much easier if you can speak the language and hold conversations with like people down in the shop, man. Like, I still like talk to, you know, some of the dudes that are there, but you know, your normal, like, just bonjour, ça va, that's it, you know, how are you? And that's about it. But they write back in English because they just know that I don't speak French.
Yeah. So, well, I think that was the other thing. I worked out that the more French I spoke, the more they responded in English.
Yeah.
And because you know, it was much easier for us to communicate that way.
Yeah.
I could speak it, but it was still very hard to understand.
Mm.
If I was moving to France for the first time in 2 weeks, what would be the best tip you'd give?
Oh, man. I've got no idea, man. Like, just take it all in when you get there. Like, it'll be a rude culture shock, I mean. But trust me, it will get better. It will get better. Like, you got to adapt. And, like, it's like when you go to a different team, like, anywhere, it's just a culture shock. But, like, you're going to a foreign land. So it's probably one of the best places you can live in the world. Like, I highly recommend it. So that's my tip. Like,
yeah, go
there and take it all in.
Yeah, I agree with you. The only thing is, obviously, being so far away from family and friends, and that's the hardest part. But outside of that, it's a great experience over there. So Zeb, as we come to wrap up the podcast, I've just got a few fun rapid fire questions.
Jeez, I don't like these questions, bro. these rapid questions, I always hear them and goes, oh man, what would I say for this question?
I hope you got your answers saved up at the front of your mind there. So the first one is, you answered just previously, but I'll ask you again. Can you speak French?
Bonjour, ça va?
Anything else?
Je m'appelle Zeb.
The typical
your typical phrases. Oh man.
What's your favorite junk food?
Chocolate. I haven't had it for a while because, you know, I just know chocolate just goes straight to my belly, but it's probably one of my favorites. Like your caramel.
Yeah.
Yeah. Fruit and nut.
Really?
I'm a massive fruit and nut fan.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I hated it as a kid, and I still do.
Come on, bro. Don't knock the fruit and nut.
What is the current NRL team that you support?
Oh, man, I've got no idea, eh? I like supporting my old clubs, in particular the Newcastle Knights. You know, once a night, always a night. Like, I still live by that saying. And, you know, bit of Parramatta as well, and obviously the Titans. So I always support the old clubs that I played for.
Do you have a favorite saying or quote that you live by or think about?
Yeah, always like telling the kids this one. Talent can only take you that far, so far. So, you know, and what I mean by that is that, like, you can have all the talent in the world, and, you know, it might get you a couple of games in the NRL, but if you're not willing to put hard work behind that talent, you probably won't go as far. So I love that saying, talent can only, because I think I'm one of them dudes that I had to work hard for the career that I had.
When you're feeling overwhelmed or unfocused, what do you do to get you back on track?
Just feel like I practice gratitude, like, you know, being grateful in the moment. You know, when I am feeling overwhelmed and, you know, with stuff going on at school or at home, I just always like think back of the past 14 years that I've had, and I guess, man, what a, you know, like, grateful for those moments. So yeah, I always like think about those moments, and it sort of like brings me back to, you know, to a good state of mind. So yeah.
What has been a bad piece of advice before playing a game of footy?
Oh man, bad piece of advice. What, from coaches or
from anyone?
From anyone?
Fans, family, friends, man. Coaches, teammates.
I don't know, man. I don't know. I've got no idea, man. I'm going to have to pass on that. Oh.
We'll pass that. If one comes up to mind, I want to hear it. What is something you've purchased with $100 or less that has had a positive impact on you in the last 6 months? bucket of golf balls? From the range?
Yeah, probably okay. I've got no idea. Oh, I bought a drink bottle the other day. Cost me $80, but it's one of those big
$80 for a drink bottle.
But it's one of those big bottles that, like, because I'm gonna need it at school because it gets hot in Logan.
Yeah.
And like, so I've got a mad like flask, like big, like 1.9, and like people are already probably seeing me. What's that guy carrying around the school, man? It was like, it's like a big carrier of water.
Is it having a positive impact on you?
Yeah, I reckon it has. Like, it gets my keeps me hydrated.
Yeah, well, there you go. That's a great answer. Thanks, mate.
What's the hydration one?
Mate, you can answer whatever you want. Do you have a weird habit that not many people know about? Too many to choose from?
Yeah, there is too many to choose from. You know, my this is probably going a bit out there. Always, when I'm in the mornings, like I'm so tired, I go to the toilet and I sit on the toilet just a little wee because I'm too tired to stand. I'm too tired to stand up. So, and she goes, "What are you doing sitting on the toilet?" And he goes, "Doing a wee." And goes, "That's so wrong." She goes, "That's so wrong." So that is my weird habit.
Yeah. You know what? I'd never thought about that one, but I won't leave you hanging. I do that too. If there's an animal that describes Zeb Taylor, what would that animal be?
Zebra.
Oh, nice.
I thought about that one because, like, zebra, let's go.
Yeah, I kind of got it.
about the dad jokes, honey. Sorry, guys.
Is there a charity that you support or recommend highly for viewers and listeners to get
by? Yeah, so I grew my hair in 2016, like 2015 going into 2016, and I thought, okay, I want to cut my hair for charity. So I thought, you know, what a good way to support a charity. So I went with the Greatest Shave, like, so but now that I'm sort of like in the, like, working in the wellbeing sector and that, like, anything around like anti-bullying and that, like, man, I'll be happily to support, because I see it too much in schools at the moment. And it is scary knowing that, like, you got kids that could, you know, experience that, and just finding of ways to, like, try and combat, like, bullying. It's, like, so sad. Like, listening to the podcast yesterday of that
from Taylor,
like, man, just hearing her story was like, man, like, so inspirational. Like, but, and I'd love to probably back whatever she stands for and that. So. And whatever charity that she goes for, because, like, man, I see it in schools all the time. There's always there's at least one Taylor in every school, and it is sad.
Yeah.
So we are trying to probably work on that within schools and try and help. But yeah, anything around that bullying side of things.
Yep. Zeb, thanks for being on the podcast, mate.
Cheers for having me. Finally.
Yeah. Finally. I've got to know you a bit more. I never knew about your weird habits, but it's good to hear one of those answers. Mate, I feel like I'm not the only one.
I might have been too open there, eh? Like, you probably edit that out, eh?
No, we'll leave that one for sure. Thanks, Eva.
Sweet, man. Cheers. Thanks for having me.
If you've enjoyed this episode, then I'd love if you would hit that subscribe button, leave a comment or a review, and share it with anyone you think might enjoy it as well. For more behind the scenes content, head to my Instagram at davidmead411 and feel free to slide into my DMs if there's anyone you would love to hear from. I can't wait to bring you another episode next week, and thanks for listening to the David Mead Podcast.